Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I broke the story. I was on with Anna DeVlantes, I believe. Maybe it was John Williams. I was on WGN, and I was the first one to talk about how dogs at that point in the UK were being trained to sniff for COVID-19. Absolutely true, and succeeding at doing so. Well, now that is being done in the United States by Dr. Cynthia Otto, who is a longtime friend of this show. You may not know her name, but you might know her work. She is also the one, and she's currently working on this as well, having dogs discover cancers and the kinds of cancers that medical science has a great deal of difficulty discovering, specifically ovarian cancer, and it's working. And she's using the same sort of methods to help dogs discover COVID-19. How's that going? Well, we'll find out. We'll talk with Dr. Cynthia Otto. I almost don't know how to begin this. I was going to say she has become a friend of mine, and that's true. I was going to say, well, she changed animal care and control in Chicago, hopefully forever, sending it in a different direction. Well, that's true. She's an attorney. Well, that's true. She cares passionately. And I don't even know the word that's stronger than passionately, but whatever that word is, that's true. Susan Russell, how are you?
Oh, Steve, I'm great. It's so good to hear you. It's been a while.
It has been a while, at least a while since you've been on the radio with me. You were, for a while, the executive director of Chicago Animal Care and Control. Then Mayor Rahm Emanuel decided otherwise, and you were no longer executive director. So for those who don't know, let's follow that bouncing ball. Where did you go from Chicago?
I just think bouncing ball is the absolutely perfect analogy, Steve. I went to Philly, and I was their executive director for about 10 months, 9-10 months. And then I decided, I think we did a lot of good work there. I think it probably needed a different type of leadership, and I think they have some good leadership now. And I moved on from there to start writing some books with a friend of mine. We started a little publishing company, which we're trying to get off the ground, called Archimedes Printing Shop and Sundry Goods. I went and took the Philly bar because, you know, it's a great way to prevent yourself from getting mental deterioration is to keep taking bar exams. so I did that in February, just before COVID hit with a vengeance, and luckily passed. I was very excited about that. But I've been working for a New York class action firm on the plaintiff side of things, a little different for me, since November. So it has been an interesting journey. Life is one of those.
Yeah, it can be, you know. But you did. You changed Chicago, I hope, forever. You came in with a certain philosophy and a certain way of doing things. Kelly Gandersky, who followed you and has since left for another job as well, But she picked up where you left off. Different styles, you know, but essentially was taking things in the same appropriate direction. And then COVID hit, and Chicago Animal Care and Control, I don't think we've seen numbers so low because so many people.
I've never heard of such a thing as having like only 60 animals in that place. It's unbelievable, Steve. I was just jumping up and down going, oh my gosh, this is fabulous.
Yeah, were you surprised that the number of, not only in Chicago, but where you are in Philadelphia, all over the country, people came and stepped up and said, I want to adopt, I want to foster.
Yeah.
Were you surprised how quickly?
Thing. Yeah, and I'll tell you what it did. I think, you know, COVID has been a disaster for our human family, obviously, for the animals in the shelters. I think what it has done is just torn the lid off the great possibility that especially municipal shelters, Steve, have of fostering animals rather than having them in shelters. Shelters are horrible places for animals. They're not the worst places they could be. Some of them are coming from terrible, terrible situations. But let's face it, you change when you are in a kennel or in a, you know, whether you're a cat or a dog, that's not a good environment for you. It's loud, it's stressful. When you are in a person's home, you have the ability to be marketed individually. People get to know you. And as for beautiful animals, you know, I used to call them Chicago's dogs or Chicago dogs, and I used to call them here Philly breds just to get away from the stigma that attached to pit bull type dogs.
Uh-huh.
People are realizing now, I think, that especially since they've entered so many people's homes, that, you know, all dogs are individuals, and we had to stop judging them by their looks and based on who they were. So, you know, it's just, I think, been an incredible opportunity for people and animals to really benefit from the potential of fostering. I mean, there's been leaders out there who've really blown the lid off fostering, you know, Best Friends Promotes and Maddie's Fund. You got Kristen Auerbach out there in Pima County, who's just showing that it can be done. There isn't a need to be killing animals for space. That is absolutely not the best way to go, right? So it can be done.
So what do you think in Chicago, what are you most proud of as you look back?
I always loved the community there. The animal welfare community was just unbelievably incredible, and they continue to be unbelievably incredible. But what we are seeing more of is people getting out into the communities and helping families keep their family members. And that's how you keep animals out of shelters, is providing the assistance that people need to keep their pets in the home. And I think they're seeing more community-based initiatives in Chicago, everywhere. Humane Society of the United States with their Pets for Life, Paws, and CRISP in Chicago. CRISP, I mean, that was an incredible innovation by a group of rescues in Chicago.
Explain.
To stay at the door and keep the animals with their people or help them immediately.
Yeah, you know? You began to a little bit. Explain what this group is for people who don't know.
What, the Chicagoland Rescue the CRISP? Okay,
yeah.
So this is a group of rescues that, I mean, I don't know all of them that are involved right now, but I know One Tail at a Time. You've got Fetching Tails. You've got, Live Like Roof Foundation. There's a whole bunch of rescues, probably about 7 or 8 of them that got together. They raised money. They sat in the lobby of Chicago Animal Care and Control, and they would talk to people as they came in to surrender their pets. And they would try to figure out the why of it, right? Why is this animal coming into a shelter? And then they would provide the financial wherewithal to either get that animal out and treated, or if it's a dying animal and needed to be euthanized, they would send it to a veterinarian so that the folks could be with their animals when they were passing over to the Rainbow Bridge. And they also, when animals would come in and they had to be relinquished, because let's face it, sometimes people simply cannot keep their pets. It's not a value judgment on them. They just can't do it. And so what they would do is they would try to get those animals before they even stepped paw in a kennel at CACC. They would get them out into a rescue so that they could just not have to. I mean, when I was there, I mean, let's face it, we had canine influenza virus. It was no easy time.
Yeah.
And so any animal coming into that shelter that was definitely immunologically naive, they were going to get it. It's kind of like a COVID of the canine world. You know, you were going to get it. And it was a horrible place for animals to have to enter anyway. It was always crowded because there were so many animals coming in. And so, you know, what they would do is they would deflect them. They would deflect them into the rescue community so they would never have to be exposed to CIV in the first place. CIV finally got out of that shelter. But, I mean, there's always a risk of upper respiratory infections in cats and dogs when they're in environments with a ton of other animals.
Susan,
it was just incredible.
It is. I agree. And CRISP is great. And they set a national standard. But I wouldn't be a very good lawyer myself, and happily am not a lawyer.
You would, too. You argue like anything, Steve. You would, too. You'd be a great lawyer.
Well, I wouldn't be a very good one if I didn't say, okay, you answered a question, but you didn't answer the question I asked. So what are you most proud of? I want to nail you on this because you have a reason to be so proud. What are you most proud of what you did in Chicago?
I'm most proud, I think, of the fact that we changed hearts and minds. Not that they weren't in the process of changing anyway, but it became, I think, less acceptable to go with the status quo. I'm very proud for having talked about some of the very real issues that were plaguing that place. Everything from, you know, the euthanasia of healthy and treatable animals. We didn't want to be doing that. And I'm also proud of getting the message out there and being very transparent about our live release and our decision-making processes. I'm proud that, and that got me in a little bit of trouble.
Yes.
But I'm proud of that, you know, because everyone should be given facts. And then we as a community can make real decisions related to facts. I know facts are kind of a weird thing these days, and they become ridiculously irrelevant in some circles, but they exist, and they're real. And so people should understand what's happening in any municipal shelter. The city pays for it. That's your tax dollars. You should know when animals are going to be euthanized because of space. You should know that, it's really a big community effort to get these animals out alive, and you can be part of it. This is something that everybody should know. So I'm really proud of that, but I'm also proud of the fact that we worked with a lot of different organizations to really increase the live release rate, and it's done nothing but stay up there. It's done nothing. It was on this beautiful trajectory upwards when I got there, and I think that's really important to state that I didn't come in and just all of a sudden the live release rate was just through the roof. That's ridiculous. It was a lot of work leading up to that, mm-hmm. and a lot of organizations coming together that made that live release get up there close to the 85-90% range, and that's, you know, that's how it should be. Right now, there are so few animals in that shelter, which is just incredible to me, that I think there's just this, hopefully, this momentum, and they'll stay out of there. They'll keep circulating out. And I think that's what I'm proud of, Steve. I'm proud that I just put that, I think, quite frankly, it just became a bigger conversation because we were able to talk about it. And I was very blunt about it. And I also hated seeing animals that looked a certain way being euthanized more frequently just because of that, you know, and the assumptions. So I worked very hard, I think, to get people to think about especially the dogs that were really crowding out that shelter differently. You know, they were Chicago dogs. They were our dogs. We had to be proud of them. The cats, of course, we worked really hard to get those out. And Jenny Schleter, who was my assistant, executive assistant, she was like the premier cat lady of the city. And she was, I think, able and still able. She's still there to do such incredible things, with the cats of this city.
Of course, you're right about Jenny. And my hope is, I don't know which positions are going to be filled or who knows with budget, but you have a superstar right under your nose with Jenny right here in Chicago. I want to come back and talk about your book. Otherwise, we're in big trouble.
We're going to run out of time.
I know. So we will do that. Don't go anywhere. Susan Russell is here. And as Susan Russell may say, sit, stay. We'll be right back. Back on Steve Dale's Pet World WGN Radio, if the name Susan Russell sounds familiar, it ought to, because she was, for quite some time, executive director of Chicago Animal Care and Control. And then when she wasn't, it made the news. And you certainly were. Yeah, more people came out to your protest that, Susan Russell is going away. That must have been heartening that all these people showed up.
It was. It was heartening and heartbreaking because, obviously, I was no longer able to do work. I always call it a hell I loved. I was no longer able to do that. So it was incredibly heartening, and I deeply appreciated everyone's support for, a more humane approach to sheltering. And I think that's what has continued. But it was really heartening.
Well, now you've authored a book called the – let me see if I can get this right, Susan. You couldn't just call your book Cats. It had to be called The Gata, G-A-T-A, Unbound, a series for a Laurel file. What the heck? When you need to ask the author what the book title means, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. It's always a good learning experience. So Gata Unbound is a series of books. And so in our first volume, and I've co-written this with the amazing Lucy Noland, formerly a anchor on Fox 29. She's now doing her own thing here, an incredible journalist, nationally renowned. We got together and we wanted to write a book about some of our favorite creatures, little gods known as cats. And we came up, and we also really loved the concept of TNR, because as you know, Steve Dale, TNR, trap, neuter, return, or trap, neuter, release, whichever one you prefer, is one of the ways that we can save a lot of animals from A, ever entering a shelter, and B, being killed in shelters.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to write a book series about trap, neuter, return as a thread of theme. So the first book is called Klein's Weird Evening, and the second book is called Archimedes' Ear. They're both contained in the very first volume. But this book is about some really incredible kitty characters, because as my cats continue to school me, they are exceptional little beings, and they have wild imaginations. So this book is all about Well, we have a catthropologist. We have a male calico cat. You know how rare that can be. With a heart of gold, we know how rare that can be. We have an inventor, Archimedes, who also is, you know, our eponymous publishing company is called Archimedes Printing Shop and Sundry Goods. He's one of our main characters. But this is just the first of the series. So we've got books 3 and 4 coming out in the fall. So it'll continue. But the very first one is introducing you to two of our main characters, Klein, the male calico cat, and Archimedes, the inventor cat.
Is this a children's book series?
It sure is, but we say it's for Alorophiles of all ages, which are cat lovers, by the way. So we think a lot of folks will enjoy it because it's pretty humorously written, I will say that. And the illustrations by Katie Lacey, who is a shelter, an artist here, she has shelter art by Katie Lacey, are just unbelievable.
Unbelievable. So how do people get a hold of the book? I will answer that question. You can go to the description in the podcast at WGNradio.com or go to my website, stevedale.tv, because there's a link, which is just too long to say on the radio. Susan Russell, you are amazing, amazing. You made a change in Chicago that I think will last forever. I'm grateful, and I know I'm not alone. You have an entire city that is grateful. Thank you very much. And friends, if you have a child, you love cats, even if you're just a child at heart, check out the book. Yep. Thank you, Susan. Yep.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much.
So I was reading about how in the UK and later read a story about how in France they are training dogs to actually sniff out for COVID-19. And my first thought is, well, why is Dr. Cynthia Otto, director of the Penn Vet Working Dog Center, not doing that? Turns out about a day later, Dr. Otto began to do that. Hello, Dr. Otto.
Hi, Steve.
So you are training dogs to do this. How are you training or trying to train the dogs? Is it working to sniff out COVID-19?
So the way we're approaching COVID-19 is similar to our other medical detection, like our ovarian cancer detection program, where we're asking dogs to sniff samples from patients and determine if that sample has an odor that's unique to the disease, in the first case, ovarian cancer, and now COVID-19, and if it's different from patients that don't have the disease.
And you and I have talked about the ovarian cancer part of this a lot, because you're just at the precipice, if that's the right word, of us being able to then create a blood test for not only ovarian cancer, but potentially other kinds of cancers, specifically cancers that are currently hard for medical science to detect. With COVID-19, how's it going? You've just begun, you know, but so far, so good or no?
So we're very encouraged by the results from the French team, who have shown some preliminary results that suggest that the dogs indeed can detect a difference between sweat samples from patients with COVID-19 versus those without. And so we're going to be looking at some different samples, some urine samples and potentially some saliva samples and maybe even breath samples, trying to figure out what the best way to really have the dogs tell us the difference. And is that difference unique to sweat versus urine versus something else, so that we can find out what the best way to test or what the best sample is to test, and then eventually maybe even be able to use the dogs to screen people, similar to what happens with the TSA screening at the airport or the Beagle Brigade that screens your luggage for inappropriate agricultural items.
So how do you train the dogs to do this, and where do you get the samples from? I mean, do you look for COVID people on the street that are sick? How does that, I'm thinking maybe not, but how does it work?
Yeah, so we're all about safety here. And so we are definitely following all of the regulations, and we have approved protocols both for the animal use and the human use and also the safety. And so we're working with a wonderful multidisciplinary team. We have infectious disease specialists from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania, and they are recruiting patients to participate for us, to give us samples, so that we can test, because not only do we need the patients with COVID-19, but we need patients that might think they have COVID-19 but don't. So those are going to be the really important ones. And then there's also the asymptomatic patients that we really want to be able to see if the dogs can differentiate patients without any symptoms that would suggest that they have COVID-19, but they're carrying the virus.
Of course, this is really fascinating. I mean, it's just so fascinating to me. And I know the people listening, the first thought that may cross some of your minds is, well, is there any chance of dogs getting COVID-19 by doing this?
So great question, and something that we're very attentive to. Luckily, there are very few dogs who have tested positive for COVID-19, and they tend to be perhaps more unique situations where the dog is sleeping with a child that has COVID-19 or really close contact. But we're going to be monitoring these dogs, and in our training phase, we're actually inactivating the virus not only for the dogs, but for the people working with these samples. We don't want any risk of people contracting that. When and if we move to screening live humans, obviously there will be some people out there with COVID-19. And I think the thing that makes me feel the most comfortable, compared to how they're being screened now, where they're getting a swab of their mouth or their nose, which for me would make me gag and cough and then spread more COVID-19, people can be screened still wearing their masks. They're, you know, going to contain as much of that as possible. So I think that our risk is going to be lower. Nonetheless, we will be monitoring the dogs and the people to make sure that we're not having any undue exposure.
And to be clear, we've talked to experts about this a whole lot on the radio. COVID-19 is unfortunately, but reality, it's a human disease. It's not a canine disease. And if it happens in dogs, and it doesn't happen often, and as you said, under very unique circumstances, it seems to be a dead-end virus. They can't give it back to people. They don't get, the dogs themselves don't get very sick if there are any signs at all. Dr. Otto, thank you so much, and congratulations on all of your incredible work.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to talk about it with you.
The 4th of July is just around the corner. Not the favorite holiday for dogs, however. What to do about it, I'll tell you next. It's not that our dogs are unpatriotic, but here, from the dog's perspective, think about this. Suddenly, a loud noise happened, a really loud noise. Remember, their hearing is so much better than ours. This incredibly loud boom, 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 boom. They have no explanation as to why they're hearing boom, 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 boom. And it's adaptive, actually, for dogs to be afraid, if not downright terrified. So we can help. If you know, and you might from prior experience from last year, the year before that, that your dog is actually not just a little afraid, but terrified, talk to your veterinarian right now. Ask about a drug called Cilio. Your veterinarian will know what this is. And that drug is actually specifically for noise phobias or noise aversions. That can help a whole lot. The only real side effect is that your dog may be a bit drowsy, but talk to your veterinarian to make sure that's the right answer for you. You could also do some things that are like common sense, but need to be done. Turn on some music in the background, or better, a talk radio station, and we know what station that happens to be. 720 on your AM dial. Close the windows and try to distract your dog with toys or stuff treats inside toys like Kong toys. That, I mean, there's so many products out there you can stuff treats into, and make them really good treats and hard to get out, so your dog has something to work on, a distraction, so your dog isn't thinking so much about boom, boom, boom. I have more information about all of this and other products that I know can help you on my website, and that's stevedale.tv. By the way, also on my website, you can sign up for my free newsletter. Comes out once a week or once every other week, stevedale.tv. Talk to you next week right here on WGN Steve Dale's Pet World.